Hello.
I love that. So the irony that somebody who met her husband at the age of 14, started going out with him at 18 and married him at 23 and has never dated in her life or online dated, the irony of that is something that Alanis Morissette would be absolutely in love with right about now. But here I am chairing this panel about online dating and what it means for us. So the Lord be with you. I love doing that. It's just such a buzz. How much fun is that? Right, what we're going to do is we're going to go along the panel and everyone's going to introduce themselves. We're going to talk for about half an hour-ish and then we've got some microphones for you to ask some questions. So it'd be really helpful is if as people are talking and saying what they think, if you think of something to hold on to that question so that you can get a chance to ask it, because we don't want that awkward thing where you go, are there any questions? And no one asks anything for the first 5 minutes. All right, so hold on to those questions. I quite like to do a quick straw poll. You don't have to answer this question if you don't want to. If you're somebody who has in the past or is now on an online dating forum, could you put your finger on your nose, please? Okay, take your finger off your nose. If you're somebody who's perhaps a parent or a friend of someone who's online dating, you're here to find out more and to ask questions about that whole world, but you've never actually done it yourself, I want you to put your finger in your ear like that. Okay, so most people that we're looking at are people that are part of that world. Yep, brilliant. Right, we're going to go along. So my name's Kate Botley, and the person to my left is...
Hello, I'm David Pullinger. I run an organisation called Single Christians. We're researching on how single people and the church relate, which is sometimes very well and sometimes very badly indeed. But I'm really passionate about enabling single Christians to find partners. I've been single for most of my life and just recently got married, and I did a lot of online dating. Thank you. So I'm here to really answer questions and help.
Hi, I'm Jackie. Can you hear me? I'm Jackie. Sorry, is that better? Jackie Elton. About 16 years ago, here at Greenbelt, I founded Christian Connection. It was very low-key at the time, but 60 people joined. Since then, we've had thousands of people. And I meet people here at Greenbelt who've either had a fantastic experience at Christian Connection, have a family, etc., or they tell me how rubbish it is. So this is a more formalized way of dealing with it, but there we are.
Hello, my name is Jeff White. I'm the technology journalist for Channel 4 News. I concentrate on several areas. I do quite a lot on hacking and cybercrime. I do quite a lot on personal data and privacy. And the third area, which relates quite well to the first two, is I also do a lot about internet dating. I've done several stories in that area.
I've got my own microphone for some reason. How dangerous is that? I'm Vicky Walker. I don't just write about relationships and dating, but it seems to be a common theme. I wrote a book called Do I Have to Be Good All the Time? And didn't answer the question, and it's kind of led on to, I still don't answer it, but still it's led on to people getting in touch with a lot of things, and I'm currently working on a book called Real Life Love, which is about dating, relationships, and the church, and how well it all works.
Hi, I'm John Kershaw. I run a company called M14 Industries, which lets anyone in the world have their own dating app. And one of the apps we power, which we made, is called Bristler, which connects those with beards to those who want to stroke beards.
Isn't that the best? It makes me wish I was single. Can I just ask, John, do I have to sign... In fact, I get a freebie, don't I? Wonderful. We're going to go along the line. I think my first question is to Jeff. Jeff, could you talk us a little bit through the good, the bad and the ugly of what you found out in your work exposing data interest? Has it really changed the playing field in how we meet people and get together?
But I think you've got to see that in the context of the fact that we just spend a lot more time online now. So people say, well, you know, I meet loads of people who've met online. It's like, well, yes, because we spend commensurately more time online, you inevitably meet commensurately more people online. In terms of the good, the bad, and the ugly, I'm a journalist, so the first one doesn't really interest me, the good stuff. These companies have big marketing departments, they can afford to promote all the good stuff. What I concentrate on generally is the bad and the ugly. So the first investigation I did into internet dating focused on a very large company who at the time were called Global Personals, who we discovered had been running a team called the Pseudo Team. The purpose of the Pseudo Team was a group of, I think it was about 30 people, quite young people, who went into work every day, logged on at 9 o'clock, and set up a series of fake profiles and flirted with people on the site to try and convince them to stay on the site and to part with money. This caused, as you can imagine, some ructions at the company. Just to put their response, they said they did this for a while and then stopped. Their users were slightly miffed to find this out. The reason this is interesting is what this company did is a thing called white label dating. Put your hands up if you heard of white label dating. No surprises. What this company did was basically try to solve a problem for the internet dating industry, which is that when you set up a dating site, where do you get users? You can't just launch with you and your mates, right? You've got to have some people on the site. So what Global Personals did was provided the people. They had a stock of people who'd signed up for different sites. So if I want to set up technologyjournalistdating.com, it's a niche.
Not as niche as vicardating.com.
Hey, good match. So you set up the site, basically you want users, you could dig into Global Personal stock of users. The issue with this was the people who'd signed up for example, Vicar Dating, didn't realise their profiles were then being seen by technology journalist dating. So we had a lady who was on a single mum's dating site. She thought she was looking at other single mums, single dads, single parents, and we showed her that her profile was actually being shown on Nuts magazine and Zoo magazine next to some quite busty women. She was shocked. So that, along with the Pseudos team, was the investigation we did into Global Personals. They're not all like that. Not all sites are like that, but it does give you an insight into, frankly, what companies think they can get away with. They're not all ethical. They're not all moral. They are basically in it to make money, and some of them do that in more ethical ways than others. Does that answer the question?
That's great. Jackie, do you want to take the good?
Yes,
please. If you've done bad and ugly, do you want to take good?
Thank you. Well, we've actually matched thousands of couples. I mean, I think I had a moment when, like Jeff, I was looking around the rest of the industry and I was thinking, this is all going to hell in a handbasket. But then a group of us set up something called the Online Dating Association. And I realised that there were a lot of good sites out there that were really trying to do a good job. I mean, like, there's us, obviously, but there's people like Muddy Matches who match people in the countryside. So there's some great people out there. There's some great organisations. And people, you know, 27% and growing meet their partners online. So it is now the second most popular way for people to meet people. The first is meeting through friends. The second is going online. So it has transformed people's lives, hopefully for the better. But, of course, we know there are some risks and there are some things we need to look at. But we're working on that all the time, I promise you.
Let's go to David and let's go for your chip in on the same sort of question. Tell us it feels like a job interview. What's your best bits and what's your worst bit?
Well, in our society, 40% of people are single. Just under 30% are never married and not divorced and not separated. So that's quite a large number. The number of single people in churches is a lot fewer than that. And the churches are not attracting or keeping single people at the moment. That means if you're looking for a partner and you're a Christian, that they're much thinner on the ground across the board. Therefore, you actually have to have some sort of better mechanism if you're not in one of these mega churches with lots and lots of single people in to actually identify another single Christian at all, let alone start dating them. And that's where I think things like online dating are actually really, really valuable. I mean, you might happen to love beards as well and go to a site with beards, but you actually need some process now for doing it. The church did traditionally have lots of things called fairs and festivals and things like this, and this is one of them and is a great opportunity. But it doesn't have that nearly as systematically as it used to do, and therefore online dating provides the mechanism for doing that. I think it's wonderful. There's only one snag. that it also perpetrates the myth that there is only one person out there for you, and there are millions of people online, and you have to search through those millions. And the technology helps you do that, but actually it's a fake myth, because relationships are grown. They're grown and developed. Yes, you need some sort of compatibility. And and you won't know that until you meet the person, but you can't find online the one. You have to keep meeting people and use it as a process for meeting people, and then develop a relationship from there. And get rid of this media myth we've got to see in all the films about how difficult it is to find one and then how happily life happens after.
Thank you. John, I want to come to you next, and I want you to tell us a little bit, as someone who runs dating apps and provides the technology for it, how do we get the most out of these tools for meeting people? What's your top tips on that?
So I think it kind of boils down to the fact that online dating, when it comes to the amount of your relationship that online dating can actually change, it's basically the very, very first bit. And I think you've got to keep that in mind, that it's not going to give you the whole relationship, it's just going to give you that little, like, introduction. And the goal is to get the best introduction you possibly can, and that's where you kind of need to be a little bit smarter about how you use these things, that you don't want to go on as many dates as you possibly can. Because they will all be bad. Well, okay, like one of them might not be, but this is personal experience speaking.
You're in a safe place, John. You can open up here.
So you want to basically try to get the best dates that you can, not necessarily the most dates. And so to do that, it's about being upfront and honest on your profiles. So a feature that we actually have built into M14 and Bristler by default is a section where you can share stuff with people who you've matched with. And this might be the things that people might find off-putting, so they might not want to match with you, but that you want to kind of use to weed people out. So if, say, your faith is super important to you, put that on your, like, Tinder or OkCupid profile so that if you're going to have that mismatch down the line, you can kind of avoid that up front. I mean, that would be my advice, is just be really honest and try and put as many people off as possible.
Do any of our panelists want to come back with that? I mean, I'm really interested in what I perceive as someone who's not engaged in this is the superficial nature of some of this stuff, is the, you know, the swipe right, swipe. I just don't know how I deal with that personally, that it's judged on appearance straight away. So if anybody wants to come back with what John's said and go into that.
I've got a prickly question. No pun intended, to see what it is. Yeah.
Hello, journalist.
This is more generally about niche dating, the idea of, there's a big trend of niche dating, so muddy matches, you know, or you meet other people in the countryside. You know, this is a big trend in the internet dating industry, but I just wonder, I mean, in terms of, is beards or the lack or the presence of beards, is that really a basis for a relationship? I mean, is that...
So, slight spoiler here, the way we do the marketing is it's more at hipsters. Because
no, really? So Jesus was a hipster, I love
so,
it.
So it's not purely whether you're follically gifted. It's it's if you fall into the demographic that we're marketing at. And so people essentially see Bristler, they like it, perhaps ironically, and then they will sign up, and it's that sort of choice that they're signing up means that only the sort of the demographic that fits the marketing for that niche sign up, and that's where you can get what's referred to as high lifestyle alignment with the other people on that service.
So you can get two clean-shaven people?
Yes. When you sign up to Bristler, we ask you if you have a beard or not, and then in your filtering you can set whether you want to see people with, without, or doesn't matter when it comes to beards.
We did actually ask people on Christian Connection whether they like people with beards. And in general, I have to say, they didn't. So I don't know what that means.
That might have been... Was that a little while ago, though? Because this is...
I think we're going to have to try it again.
This is a very on-trend thing.
We're going to do another poll.
At least I'm glad it is. You know, stop plucking. Go, Vicky.
I'm noticing more people with beards starting to filter in as this conversation develops, actually.
Target beard audience. Whoop, whoop for the beards.
I was going to say that there was actually statistically proven evidence. I think it was Match or one of the big sites in America looked at who their most popular matches were, the people that got the most matches, and they were really niche people for that exact reason. It was the woman was, you know, very tattooed. She had she was very striking looking, and it was either you either loved her and that was who you wanted, or not your cup of tea at all. So there is definite proof that actually being as this is me, take me as I am, but not, you know what I mean. guys, come on, you know. But actually, that is the way to go, just because that is how you meet the person that meets you. You can't be someone else and have that facade and then hope for the best. So I think that is definitely true.
Okay. How are we doing? I think we might take some questions now. I think we might do a couple of questions now. So if you would like to ask, I'm just looking over at our techie people. Is it better for them to come to us or for you to go to them? They're not listening. Hello. All right, they're going to try and fight their way through to you. So if you've got a question for any of our panelists, then do pop your hand up. No idea. Oh, there it is. Okay, side each. So if you can try and squeeze your... Are you going to them or are they coming to you? I'm confused. Excellent. So if you've got a question... So if we go... Right, whoever gets there first. That's fun.
Hello. Ooh,
so
hello.
If you go first, yeah. Lady from Radio Northamptonshire.
That's me.
That'd be lovely.
My name's Marsha. My married name is Marsha O'Sullivan. And I considered myself to be an internet dating pioneer because I was doing it at the turn of the century. And I met my husband 13 years ago now. And one thing at the time, because I was so unusual at that time, a lot of people said, God, I can't believe you're meeting someone online. And it's the whole thing around it has changed. I always say to people that the way that you meet someone doesn't determine whether you're going to have a successful relationship or not. And I just wondered, those especially who run those sites, do you actually say that, you know, this is a way of just meeting people, this is not going to determine, you know, whether you're going to have a successful relationship or not?
So who'd like to?
And David? If you don't, do you think you should?
One quick bit of data on that before other people comment is that in 7 years, they took all the marriages in America, and of those who met online, which was 30%, of those who met online, their marriages were rated slightly higher, and there were slightly fewer breakups, statistically significant. So the answer on the data is yes. In general, it's just a process of first meeting, and then you have to develop through all the stages of relationship. But actually, the intentionality of it does appear to be beneficial.
I was going to just question the idea that the way you meet doesn't affect the way you form the relationship. I'm not entirely sure that's true. I think if you're presented with a cornucopia of people who are apparently single, waiting to date you, the temptation is to get through them all as quickly as possible and just keep going and going and going until you get to the one. I question the amount to which people give each other time, because the platform isn't based around time. The platform's based around the pick and mix, infinite choice. You'll get to the perfect marshmallow surprise. You know, just go through them quickly. I do think there's something in that. Unfortunately, I don't have data to sort of fall back on, but I don't know.
We do try and give people lots of advice. We write lots of blogs. We do training. There is a problem, though. People don't necessarily listen, you know. I think people do go their own way. And I would say that men, dare I say, go more for the let's get through as a lot of people as possible. And then women don't tend to try and date enough people. They say, oh, that's the one. And then when they don't respond, they say, oh, it didn't work. So it would be lovely if we could give people more advice, but it's quite difficult to get those messages across.
Hello. You've kind of answered some of it already, but it was a point that Beardman said. Was
John.
Sorry. Beardman John. was that being on a dating site myself, you said, you know, don't necessarily date loads of people, but if you're talking to someone for, I don't know, however long, sometimes when you meet them, actually there is no spark and you kind of feel I've wasted all that time. You know, so I don't know which way is the better way to, you know, how many days should I leave it? How many weeks should I leave it? How many times a day should I speak to them before the meetup happens?
David has the technology.
That social psychologists actually analyse this in the States, and the answer is about 2 weeks. If you go beyond 2 weeks, if you go beyond 4 weeks, it's definitely a no-no. If you go beyond 2 weeks, that's about the maximum before you meet them. Otherwise, you over-invest and over-anticipate what it's going to be like, and it doesn't work.
Great. It's interesting what David was saying about there being traditionally in the church fairs to meet people and that kind of stuff. And I guess just interested in what you think how the church should be engaging and equipping their singles. And, you know, should we have vicars on a Sunday giving sermons about, not necessarily about Christian connection, but, you know, talking into this, especially when there are issues with dating apps and that blurred line between people looking for a relationship and people looking for fun and, you know, right now and other terms like that.
I still think that the church as a whole is quite suspicious of technology. So I hear from people who say, well, my church told me that I shouldn't look, I should just wait. And there is still that thing of it'll come to me. So I think it would be helpful for the church as a whole and church leaders and people who are actually invested in their congregations and the people around them to actually start to think about what the world is like, to listen to what it's like for people out there and not to assume that what works 2,000 years ago, probably not going to work exactly the same now unless you've got a dowry, I don't know. So there needs to be a kind of catching it with this is how people communicate, and it is a physically different way of communicating. So the idea that you don't see that person until, you know, you've communicated with a bit online, you've got to get over that. There's a kind of face the fear that I think churches probably need to start talking about more and just understanding, hearing from people rather than just telling them how they should do it. I think that's important.
When we first wrote to the churches 15, 16 years ago and said, we got this dating site, we wrote to thousands and we got two responses, both of which said, don't write to us again. And I think that for a long time was the pattern. People were actually being told not to go online. That is changing as people are marrying people in church, finding out how they met. But I think there's a long way to go. And I mean, I gave my first presentation ever to clergy, a sort of serious number of leaders, about how it all worked, the stats, how as a leader you should be encouraging people or not, and being more informed. It is really starting to happen, but it's, you know, encourage your leaders because they need to understand, they need to get involved, and they need to sort of, they go, oh, I was married, you know, 30 years ago, you know, 5 children, it's all great. We need to change the thinking.
Go to the back, because I think that guy might explode. And it's a mess. We have to pay a fine if we make a mess at the bathroom. Brilliant. Thank you. I'm not asking people's names. Your name, sir?
My name's Gwyn.
Hi, Gwyn. What's your question?
There's two things. I think I was surprised that you were critical of the superficiality, because I think that all of us make a decision on whether someone's attractive, probably within about 4 seconds of meeting them.
Sure.
And so I agree with my colleague down there, who is a friend of mine, that you don't want to invest 2 weeks or frankly even 24 hours having a conversation with someone online. I just think meet them. And that brings two other problems. The first one is timing. The biggest failure, I think, for all the internet meetups, hookups, dates, whatever it is I've done, is you're not, one of you's working, one of you's not working. It's a timing thing. And once that moment goes, it goes. The second one is you can't deal with things like smell and personal hygiene on internet dating sites. And for me,
are you speaking from really experience, important. Gwen?
Yeah, you meet someone and they've got really bad breath, and that for me is just like the number one thing that is just disgusting. And so I say, two messages, I like your profile, nice picture, blah, blah, let's meet. And I know that there's other people in this room who probably think, oh no, I can't meet after one message. I'd want to meet them and get to know them. And then you get an investment problem. You meet up, there's a really bad BO or breath problem. Things go rapidly downhill from there. So I just wanted to know how the panelists sort of would deal with the issues of smell and timing.
Great question. I'm so glad we went to you next. Who wants to talk about smell?
Smell, but Vicky can start.
Yeah. Bring all smell questions to me, please, on future. I think timing is important, but I probably think opposite of what you just said, because actually that get in there fast, find out if it's worth it. What am I going to... It's you're talking about another human being at the end of the day. You're talking about someone that actually... If you worked in an office with someone and you might sit there for 6 months and you might share a bit of banter, you might make each other tea, and then suddenly you start to look at them in a different light, you wouldn't treat them the same way if suddenly their picture flashed up and you're immediately like, no, hey, you, right now, me and you, let's go. Because actually that, I would probably take that as some kind of probably being boxing gloves, because I'd be expecting something that was quite intense, and actually that investment level, actually the investment is quite high, I think, already, because you want to know, are you going to waste my time? And actually, if you can't make time to do this well, I think that is probably, I'm not saying you don't, but I'm saying as a whole, if it's let's get in, let's find that person, let's get on with this, then actually the quality of relationship is affected by the speed at which you pursue it as well. I think things need time to blossom and grow. Please wash. I think that is important, and I would recommend it. But actually, I think we do need to cut each other some slack and not assume. I would personally, if I got a message that said, let's go now, 24 hours, I think, no, oh, this is too much. This is intense. Partly from a personal safety perspective, because, you know, if 200 people sent messages like that, you would just, yeah, you'd probably run a mile. So I do think you have to respect the other person's boundaries, get to know them, and understand that they might have their own speed they want to take things at. But at the end of the day, we should be investing in that person. Even if it's only for an hour of your time, that is still an interaction with that person as another human being that I think is more valid than just, is this person going to be the one that we join up, run down the road together, off we go into the distance? I think you have to just give it breathing space with your nose, with your mouth, whichever works, if there is personal hygiene issue. But I think in order to respect each other and allow something to have the chance to grow, that it shouldn't be that speedy, just because that's not how we function as humans, personally.
I was just going to quickly say that, that you can't ignore the economics of this. There is a hard economic logic behind keeping people on the site. And unfortunately, the phrase for this in technology is stickiness of site. Let's skip over that. So you want to keep people on the site for as long as possible because you want to keep them renewing. This mostly, apart from things like Tintin's got a slightly different model, but most of these sites work by a monthly subscription. It is not really in their vested interest to get people matched and out the door. They want you to hang around for several months. The flip time, the turnover, so going out, finding somebody, coming back, 9 to 18 months, they want you to come back, they want you to keep renewing.
We really do want to get people matched. I think happy matches do keep Christian connection going, because people tell their friends. For us, it's crucial, and we would honestly never just keep people on the site just to waste their time. So yes, there are some people who want to do that. That's not who we are. And I would agree with Vicky that, you know, women do not like to be hit on, and that's what drives women off dating sites. Come out with me, do this now, tomorrow. It's not how it works. Often that's how some people would like it to work, but I'm afraid it doesn't.
So we've looked at our numbers on that specific issue, because it's something that when we deal with investors, the big issue that comes up is, isn't your churn rate really, really high? Because if you're successful, people will pair up and then never use your service again. And we've essentially, I can't find in our numbers where that happens, because, so it's relatively a rare event that someone stops using your dating app because they've started dating someone else, relative to all the other reasons why they might stop using your dating app. And so it's not actually a particularly high
part of what makes up the churn. However, if you make your website really, really successful and those people do go off, they're more likely to recommend at least one or more people come back. And if you're if you partner people up successfully, you can, and then it doesn't work out. If you've actually done a really, really good job at finding them a match very, very quickly, they're more likely to come back. So whilst it seems intuitively like a service where if you're successful, your customer goes and never comes back, it actually, there's more forces that make that a thing that's very, very valuable, except in the case of people like white label dating where they're awful. But that's like a different business model. But in most sort of actual dating sites, that's a surprisingly small part of the spreadsheet.
Hi, my question is for Jackie specifically. Jackie, it's actually a question and some constructive criticism.
I knew this would happen.
Sorry? Oh, Lou. Lou, hiya. I'm a full member on Christian Connection.
Thank you.
And that's okay. But one of the things I find really, really frustrating about it, and it's always the really handsome men, aren't full subscribers. So you have an ability on Christian Connection to pay, and you can communicate with each other, or not pay, be on there, but not actually have any communication with someone. It's quite frustrating. And it also probably says a lot about some of the men being cheapskates, I guess. But my question really is about your pricing strategy. Do you think it would be a better idea to reduce the price of your monthly subscription to get a greater pool of people, therefore a greater pool of successful connections?
Well, first of all, on the issue, when we first started, if you didn't pay, you were off. Disaster. You know, that just doesn't work because not everybody feels comfortable about paying straight off. So you do need to keep people on there for a limited period because there are some people who wait to be contacted. What we do that is different from many other sites is that people are allowed to respond. So they can write back to somebody emailing them. So hopefully, if they're interested in you, they will subscribe, I hope. I mean, it is very difficult to get people to commit. The thing about the pricing strategy... sorry. I mean commit to a dating site. People are suspicious. They've heard of, you know, global personals and all that. So it's understandable people are cautious and they wait till they've actually been approached by somebody that they like. As far as pricing strategy, obviously, Christians, I wish this wasn't the case. I wish there were more of us. But we are a relatively small proportion of society. So we have to keep the prices at a level where we can afford to run in a safe and effective way. So we obviously play around with price, but I think we're one of the cheapest subscriptions out there. Obviously, we can't compete with, you know, some of the apps which are free. But then do you want free? I mean, there are lots of free sites out there. And yes, a lot of people do want free, but there's a price to be paid in terms of safety. I mean, we really do a lot of customer care, and I'm afraid it costs. And I think that's generally how people prefer it.
Vicky, you mentioned safety as well, and Jackie, you've just brought that up then. I know that's some of the concerns perhaps for some people that have come here to talk about their kids or their partners or whatever. Not their partners. They've got partners. That's not Ashley Madison. We're not doing that one. That are concerned about the safety and the security of online dating. So is it as terrifying and dangerous online dating as sometimes the Daily Mail would have us believe?
Who wants to do this one?
You start, and then Vicky looks like she's nodding.
In terms of real danger, as in we're talking rape and violence and that sort of thing, I would say that is very, from our experience, that is very, very, very rare. We're talking like one or two in 15 years. But I'm also aware that when people have had a bad experience, they don't tell anybody. You know, they might ring a helpline, but they might not tell us. So I don't want to be complacent about that. all we know is that it seems to be rare. Where the dangers come in is scammers, people who pretend to be madly in love with you, keep you going on for a very long time, and basically, after a while, tell you they've had a crisis and they need money. And that's when people get hugely emotionally invested in a relationship with somebody who is basically a criminal gang. That is the big danger. We spend huge amounts of time on that, but that is the danger rather than the sort of scary, violent stuff.
Thank you. I think the key word in it is emotions, and whether that's emotional intelligence, awareness, just your instincts on things, that if things seem too good to be true, they probably are. So there's just things I think you can do in yourself to be ready for it, to be emotionally ready, to have a good support network, that probably you'll meet people that are not the people you want to meet. You'll be approached by people like that. But actually, if you're sort of attuned to what might happen and the way you meet someone and the process of meeting someone, you don't make assumptions about the shop window that they're putting out there. I mean, when I met my partner on a free dating app, don't tell Jackie, he just literally had a two-word profile, that was it. And then there was a long process of us actually getting to know each other and me sort of ticking off all the things I'd want to know if I'd met him in a different environment. So, tech guy. It's not Jeff, by the way. But, that was it. That was all he had. Yeah. But I, you know, his messages were nice. He looked nice. It took maybe 3 or 4 weeks of timing for us to actually meet. But he was a really, really nice person. And it just unfolded in a good way that actually he didn't try and sell himself very much. I think my profile maybe had 5 words on it. And it wasn't really about that. It was just about using your instinct, your emotional intelligence, your maturity, and what you would do in any other situation to get to know someone, not almost build yourself into a rom-com scenario and then find that it's not that.
I've got to ask, were your 5 words looking for a tech guy? Because that... Guy at the back there, please.
Your name, sir?
Hi, I'm Matthew.
Hi, Matthew.
I'm a gay rugby-playing Christian, so if anybody wants to meet afterwards, I'll be around.
And Matthew, your name means God's gift.
It certainly
is. So there
is.
We go.
It's great us discussing this. I'm online, but being single in the church, shouldn't the church actually just go out there and help us celebrate being single?
Yours. It's got to be yours, that one.
Most single people say that, and we would love to find a way of doing that. The reason it doesn't do it at the moment, because you probably know the history of Jesus' time and why there's so little singleness in the Bible, is there was a law in place, the Lex Julia, or Julia, as you would say it, in place, saying that people had to be married between certain ages, basically childbearing ages, except for the Vestal Virgins. So that's why there's so little in the Bible about it. And, of course, the law was only dropped in 320 when Constantine made the Holy Roman Empire. Yeah? Now, that transferred all the duties of the clerks for registering births, marriages, and deaths into the church at that point. And the church, ever since that time, which is why we wear Roman clothes in the Church of England still, and the Catholic Church, has been doing that. So it's all family-based. And so there's been no history, apart from the monastic communities, of any kind of celebration of singleness or support of singleness in the church. And our situation is vastly different now in the 21st century, and we've got to find a way of doing it. And we've been asking people how they would like to be celebrated. We have friends who... are in tears, you know, as I discovered, you know, until recently, you know, my brothers and sisters, 7 of them, all got married, all had these huge parties. My parents spent lots of money buying them presents, then all their children, things like that. I'm thinking, I haven't had a single celebration for 40 years, you know, whatever it is, you know, and they have. And it's really, really painful for single people. So we need to find in the 21st century a new way of doing this. And we haven't got an answer yet because we don't think singles days, which happen in some countries, is the answer. People don't want to be labelled single, so just having a singles celebration in church once a year isn't a great thing either for many people. So we're trying to explore how to do it with people. And so if you've got any ideas, we've got some ideas, like a lot of single people are godparents, for example. We don't celebrate or support godparents in our church. And we should be doing that and finding a way of doing that. So there's things that we're starting to explore, but you're absolutely right. And if anybody has any ideas that they want to get behind and get a movement going to change things in the country, we would love to hear about it.
And we have a website, singlechristians.co.uk, which we work on, which is all about that. Okay.
Hello.
Hi. I just want to thank Matthew for that point, because that was...
name is?
I'm Henry, or on Christian Connection, I think I'm Henry 326. So,
I'm loving this, by the way.
I'm joking.
And is Matthew your sort?
I don't think so.
Okay,
no.
All right. Just asking.
Not a fan of rugby.
Okay, there we go. That's fine. Got a swipe left there, mate. Sorry.
I actually have found success through Christian Connection, which is pretty good. And that's having tried every other, it's like, okay, Cupid, Tinder. I have even been on Bristler, no luck there. But what I'm finding quite hard now, after sort of struggling as a single person, which I think is a bit of a silly way of putting it, of how to now tell people how I met my partner. And I think we both struggle with that and sort of tiptoe around the subject. How did you meet? Oh, a Christian thing, this or that. Even a lot of my friends actually called Christian Connection desperatechristiansingles.com, which I think is quite a harsh way of looking at it, but I think there's sort of the stigma around both online dating and sort of Christian dating as well, and the expectations. I was wondering, number one, do you have any advice on any tips on how to sort of overcome that stigma, or if not, do you have any alternate lies that I could give?
And have you got anyone you'd like to ask that to, Henry, particularly?
That is a general question.
Me? What do you do about stigma? Yeah. You know me, I'd just tell people. I'd wear it on a T-shirt, but that's me. But I marry people a lot. Not everyone that I want to, obviously. What I mean is I do wedding ceremonies. There's a whole section of society that I hope we'll be able to do wedding ceremonies for before too long. But bringing down the system from within, that's what we're doing. Anyway, that's by the by. I ask a lot of my couples how they met. Obviously, you know, when I'm preparing their handcrafted sermon for their beautiful day and not just pulling the one off the shelf that I've had done for the last four weddings, I ask them how they met, and hopefully a story will come out of that. And just as a top tip, it's a real blessing when they tell me the truth about how they met, because that means that we can have a really honest conversation about the ups and the downs of that. More and more of my couples that I marry, and I know that's not yet what I'm able to do for you and your partner, but more of my couples that I'm marrying, they start by saying, we met at work or we met in a bar, and then they sort of look at each other and do this or that, because they've just lied to a vicar, and that makes them feel really weird. And I go, and I always say to couples as well when I'm getting ready for their marriage, is there anything you're not telling me? And sometimes sometimes they go, what do you mean? What do you mean? I say, well, you know, is there something in your family that you need to let me know about, just so I've got a heads up for the day? And that's when that answer comes, actually, we met online. And it's like it's a dirty little secret, like it's a thing that's wrong and, dare I say, even sinful, because that's the moment in the conversation where they would normally tell me that actually their dad that's walking them down the aisle isn't their real dad, and I need to be really sensitive to that sort of stuff. And all those kind of like pastoral, you know, and they go, we actually met online. But I think it's like anything, the more we talk about this stuff, the more that we are honest with each other, then that's a new normality, isn't it? That becomes just the way. And to hear that you're not alone, if 27% and rising, yeah, so 30% and rising meet online. So this is Henry, everyone. And your partner's name, if you would, don't mind me asking? And Chrissy, they met online. Isn't that great? Yeah.
You know, first of all, tell us, because it's a huge encouragement to those of us who work on Christian Connection. I'd say only about half the people tell us, but Christians are a lot more generous than I think a lot of other people are about fessing up. But it really encourages the people who work on the site. But I think if you tell people, you're really encouraging your friends as well. And you're telling your church leaders, because that's really important, that they know that this is not just some weird activity that's in the Daily Mail. It's great if you share it.
My church, you see, you asked me a question and now I'm doing loads of talking. The other thing in my church is we've got an aging congregation. Oh, this is just weird to them. You know, the fact that people meet in this way is very, very strange. And so if we keep talking about that sort of stuff, it becomes the new normality. So we just need the brave few to speak up and speak out, but it'll make a great sermon for your wedding. Brill. Doesn't necessarily... No, I'm teasing. It's fine. I'm only joking. I'm being frivolous. Shall we go right to the back, just there?
Hello.
I'm aware we've had... If you go next, and then the lady in the flowery dress goes after
my
you.
My wife.
Oh, right, okay. Did you meet online?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Christian Connections?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Sorry, we didn't tell you. Yeah, we have to now. We considered this, letting you know. My name's Phil.
And I'm Liz.
We met online. I'm a vicar. That's more of like a big like coming out thing at Greenbelt, it seems. And I've told the congregation where I was a curate and the congregation where I am now, and people, older people, younger people, have been so supportive. So just tell people. There's nothing to be ashamed of. Just tell people.
Just to add to that, the response I get from the older population in churches when I tell them, they go, oh, there really is a lot of nice people online, and you've got a really good one. So just do tell people, because they are excited and they want to know how like online dating works and technology, because they've heard about it. They just don't necessarily understand it. So, and I've told a few people, and since I've met Phil, I've got two close friends who've now met their husbands on Christian Connection as well, and I don't think they would have gone online unless I had met Phil. So tell your friends as well.
So let's ask the age question. Talk to me about what the age brackets... That's not personal, by the way. I'm not saying you're really old or anything. You're not. I'm talking about, you know, because is it like other social media where we're seeing, and now we're seeing the biggest take-up on things like Facebook, for example, is in an older demographic. Is it changing online as well? Are more of our more senior members of our communities logging on and swiping right?
Shall I take that quickly? Very quickly, we have... I think it sort of cuts off at a very old age, but we did have a lot of 80-year-olds at one point, particularly the men. But generally, yes, it's definitely getting older. And, of course, younger people now are engaged as never before because of the mobile. People treat... I think Tinder, for better or for worse, has really broken the mould in terms of younger people just thinking it's totally normal to go mobile dating. And they never did that before. That's a new thing. It carries its dangers. But I think people... That has changed attitudes across the board.
So I think it's like the age demographic's interesting, and also the behavioural demographics are super interesting. A lot of people now, if you go to a new city, will use Tinder to find friends. It's why Tinder launched their new Tinder Social thing, because they realised that so many of their members were just using it to try and find friends, because it's really hard if you move to a new city to actually find people to hang out with. And so I think as well as seeing the age stuff, you're seeing this behavioral stuff, but that kind of feeds back into it, that if you didn't grow up on the internet, you didn't grow up gossiping on WhatsApp or whatever that I do at the weekend, you're not used to the idea of meeting friends through an app. And so it's a lot to do with what people are comfortable with. And sometimes that just takes a very long time to come through. And some people just grew up comfortable with this kind of stuff, which is why you see mobile apps skew much younger in terms of demographics, I think.
That beetroot. Don't mind. Your name, sir?
David.
Hi, David. Ask your question, please.
It's about the pricing strategy. Isn't there a lot of advertisement about free registration, and then as soon as you register, you can't actually use the site until you pay?
And is that 21 in particular? Is that a specific Christian connections?
No, it's not question. Specific to Christian connections.
Okay.
It seems to be the general rule that you can't actually access anyone until you paid, and then you can only have a limited access depending on how much you pay and how much you end up signing on for.
Okay. So arguments for and against paying sites v free apps.
Well, first of all, we do give people a free trial. We're about the only people who do that. I think it's a 5-day trial at the moment. Is it?
Three.
but after that, people are allowed to be on the site. They can see what's they can search. They can receive messages. I actually think that paying is a really good thing because it gives people an investment in the site. It gives some commitment, and it provides the wherewithal for people to be able to look after them. That you always have to pay some way. If it's a free site, there's going to be advertising, it's going to be something about your data being shared around. So at least when you subscribe, you know what you're paying for. You know what the contract is, and you have a right to say, look, give me proper service.
I think just go with what you're comfortable with. I mean, I used free, and I've used paid for sites, and I think they work in different ways. So sometimes you want to sit at home and read through lots of profiles, and other times you might just be somewhere and it's location specific and you see who's in the area, and it works in different ways, and there's no law saying you may only be on one site. And it's just again about common sense, about emotional intelligence and all the things that just keep us grounded. I mean, I had a friend who said, oh, I'm having a break from dating apps. I said, oh, which one were you on? He went, oh, I've closed off all 12. I was like, how, what? He went, well, I live in a small town, and you know, it's just embarrassing now. So I think you just know, like, what would you do as a person anyway? You'd pay to go out somewhere nice and meet someone. You'd pay to go on to a nice club or to a nice holiday. You know, it's the people are running businesses even with good intentions. So I think it's perfectly valid to say, I'm paying you for a service that might result in me meeting the person I want to spend the rest of my life with, rather than going, I can't believe you haven't just sent me that person for free. I mean, I think we've got to get in perspective that actually people are working really hard to provide something, that they want to actually do something good in the world and bring people together. So I don't think it's unreasonable to ask people to pay for that. But equally, I think free apps are worth a go also.
But this is why Tinder is such an interesting model, is because the classic model of internet dating has been free to browse, pay to message. And that's, many, 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 many sites have launched on that model. And then Tinder came along. I was at a dating conference recently, and somebody put up a slide as part of their presentation, which had, the bit in Planet of the Apes where Charlton Heston's on his knees going, you blew it up, you maniacs. It was that slide, but with Tinder, you blew up the business model, because this thing launched, and the internet dating industry, from what I know, hate it, absolutely hate it, because suddenly there's a new game in town. You give it all for free, and then eventually Tinder launched the sort of Tinder premium model. They just seem to completely throw the whole thing up in the air, and what's interesting is it's such a simple model. It's such a swipe left. They've reduced everything down. It's like they've simmered the whole thing down. Let's get it free. Let's get it basic. Let's get it quick. Swipe left, swipe right. That's the incredible thing about Tinder. I'm not sure it's the right word, but I'd use the word cynicism of it. It's like, this is as basic as we can get it. There you go. And it's been hugely successful in terms of growth. So.
And their numbers are dropping now.
People have grown out of it.
Now, you've got the mic, so you can ask a question.
I thought it'd be a bit rude just to jump in. I'm intrigued. The title of this was, Has Online Dating Changed Everything?
And do you think back in the day, I don't know whether this is true or not, people, it was your family, it was your community, it was your friends, that how you got introduced to people, my mate fancies your mate, that kind of idea, or families going, I know someone that you might be good for, let's see if we can work out how we can have a party or get people to meet. And it was a very, not that internet isn't human, let's not go down that route, but it was in your locality, and it was people you knew, and you match-made people, and you did this, and it was very real. And now it's like, it's up to you. It's me and my interaction online, and my friends and my family are now not going, oh, there's a really cute guy, and I'm going to introduce you to him and stuff. And is that how the online has this is taking the conversation in a different direction. Is that how the online has really changed it? It's gone back, it's much more individualistic again. Have we gone back into an individualistic society that's about me, and I have to find it for myself?
Oh, everyone wants to talk about that one.
Love that.
Quickly, Dan Ryan. I have friends, and they kept saying, we just know the perfect person for you, David. Did they ever introduce me? No, they didn't. And it still really riles me inside that they didn't. And so it's when you're talking about individualism, it's not only just about me, it's about all the friends and everything in society. They probably felt just embarrassed to do it.
I think Britain as a country has been very unsupportive of single people in terms of both supporting them as single people and supporting them to meet people. And the church has been no different. And I think it's very important that the community supports people going online. So that's one way of looking at it. But it doesn't mean that people still shouldn't be supportive of each other. It's the second most important way that people meet. People first and foremost meet through friends. So please don't decide that you're not going to introduce people to people just because the internet exists. So don't let that get you out of it, okay?
I think one of the reasons the internet dating industry has been so compelling, and why lots of people turn up to talks like this, and why, you know, these things get traction, is because what internet dating does is offers this incredibly compelling prospect, which is that you can systematize and control love. Love is quite a damaging thing. It's quite a harmful thing, potentially. Your heart can get broken. We've always struggled with that as human beings. You know, it's just part of being a human being. And if you go back in time, you know, over millennia, we've had, you know, the idea of love potions, the elixir of love, the idea of Cupid's arrow, that love can be, you know, can be controlled, that we can bring this thing to heal. And what internet dating does is brings millennia of psychological yearning to get to the point where love is just simple and straightforward, and we can just get it under the cosh, with the Silicon Valley model of tech solutionism, the idea that if we have enough data, enough processing time, we can solve any problem. And love's a problem, and we'll solve it. And I think that's the heart of why internet dating is such a compelling proposition, because it just seems to hold out this chalice that we've actually been looking for as human beings for quite a while. That'd be my two pence.
I think there's also a lot of marketing generally around the idea of love and finding the one, and then you qualify and then you're validated and you step up to that level. And I find when I was younger that I'd be sitting at home sometimes on Saturday night and all my couple friends would be doing things. And suddenly if I was seeing someone, it'd be like, oh, you must come and do this with four other couples. You must come do this. And I was like, hang on a minute. Why weren't you inviting me when I was at home? So I think there's this general change that needs to happen where we don't just see two as the perfect number, that actually we're much more able to integrate and be healthy. And the internet can encourage us to be very narrow in the way we look at the world. And I think we have to almost stop seeing ourselves as a living profile and actually just start engaging with each other and not thinking, I must have twos everything I do, or I must wait until I meet that person. I think the until is the dangerous thing, that life can't really start until I'm in that place. And from both sides, I think that needs to change for just to get a healthy balance.
To go back to the original question, I think, if I remember it, I don't like most of my friends' friends, and I would be mortified.
Hope none of them are here.
That's right, they're not, I checked.
Yeah, that's fine.
I would be mortified if someone tried to set me up with them, just because it's so personal and it's not something that I talk about. And online dating gets you round that. Like, I no longer have to be a creepy dude in a bar, because if I meet with someone online, they've already opted in to the conversation. So it cuts that whole awful part out, which, like, when people talk about what we've lost when we've moved dating online, I'm like, yes, we lost that awful thing that I hated. So that's my answer.
Good answer.
It's very personal, but.
Great answer. We've got time for just one final question, I think. So this is the last question, so make it brilliant and astute and fabulous.
No pressure.
No pressure.
Okay, I'll try. Thanks, Kate. It's Peter.
Hi, Peter.
Probably a question for Jackie. I was one of your really early adopters, I believe.
Very early. Yes, that first green belt, yeah, 2000.
So 16 years ago.
Yep.
There were certain profiling questions on the website that were asking, like, are you prepared to meet a smoker, a drinker, or divorcee, etc.? How often do people break those straight yes-no questions, like me?
You mean break?
Well, when
lie?
For example, I said I'm prepared to meet people within like 30 miles of where I live, I think, and I would prefer not to meet single mothers or divorcees. Just those basic yes-no questions. I have totally now broken that. I'm now married to a lovely lady with a beautiful daughter, which I wouldn't have otherwise met. How often do people go against that kind of profiling?
I think it's really important that people, you know, when they say, I want this person, I mean, they're buying into what Jeff was talking about. I want this very specific thing, this person who lives in this part of London who does this thing. I think it is when people are prepared to compromise on things like location, who are prepared to go with the flow, that I think very often when people are successful, they do break it because they realize it's not really about that. You know, we put our own little filters on things and we limit ourselves. It's a lot of reasons why a lot of people are still single, because they have very much restricted themselves. And so I think, you know, we have actually hugely rolled back on the profile questions that you were answering 16 years ago. We do a lot less of that, and we make it more free-flowing now. We've changed a lot.
Okay, that's about all we have time for now. I know lots of you still had hands in the air and wanted to ask questions. Our four guests will be around for a few minutes. Are you all right to hang around for 5 minutes? So come and grab them and ask them all sorts of questions that you still have to ask. Of course, all these things work because, like any dating app, because we've got people here to talk about them. So thank you so much to you for coming to listen. And can we show our appreciation for David, Jackie, Jeff, Vicky, and John.